When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, movie friends? Welcome back to Raiders of the Lost Podcast, the ultimate film and TV podcast. And today's an episode of Letterboxd Recap, where we go through the movies we've been watching this past week, as well as rating the Letterboxd top 4 of 5 of you listeners. James, how has your movie watching journey been this week?
I have 7 films logged, Anthony.
Whoa.
And I'm trying to take you down this week. I don't know how many you have. Probably quadruple that, but you know, 7 I think is a little more than last week when you gave me a bunch of crap.
I also have 7.
Oh, I tied.
We tied
the movie king over
well,
there.
You had like 2 last week.
I didn't have 2, I had 3.
Well, that's still that's pretty close to 2.
I had 4.
All right, you had 4.
I had 4 and I had a busy week. I was doing stuff.
You're busy bee.
All right, not everyone watches 7 movies a day again, but I had 7 logged this week and I was all over the place with my genres and styles, and also kind of when it came to years, mostly staying post-1990s, like mid-90s on.
Yeah, I actually watched mostly new movies this past week. I watched 1 from 2024, and then I watched, no, 2 from 2024, and then I watched 3 from 2023. So there were 3 films that I had been meaning to watch, and I finally got around to watch them. They were available to rent.
You mean you didn't
rent.
Watch The Melancholy of Flowers from 1946? Oh, it's odd.
The Melancholy of Flowers, directed by Ingmar Bergman.
I made that up. Sounds like a movie from the 1940s, doesn't it?
It does.
The Melancholy of Flowers.
Sounds like something I would watch.
It does sound like something you'd watch.
Sounds like it'd be in the top 20 of Letterboxd all time.
Probably. Probably.
No, but I kept it mostly contemporary. Actually, completely in contemporary this time.
All right. Well, what was your first watch of the week, man?
My first watch was a Mads Mikkelsen movie.
Oh.
Which came, is his most recent film called Promised Land, which came out in 2023.
Is this the one where he's a farmer?
He is a farmer.
Yes. I remember seeing a trailer for this.
It's actually really great. I gave it 4 stars, and it had a really interesting story. It's based loosely on a real person. So in Denmark, there was this huge piece of land called the Heath that was notorious for being unfarmable. Soil was horrible. Nothing would grow there. And this man, this guy that Mads Mikkelsen plays, he was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to grow a farm here. He came from nothing. He was a peasant and worked in the army for 20 years and became a captain. He's just a nothing. And so if he has this plan, if he can build a farm on the Heath, then the king, as a reward, this has like been, people have been trying to do it for decades. The reward for the king is if you can build a farm that grows actual food on the Heath, then they will send a settlement there of like hundreds of settlers to build like basically a settlement there. But first you have to make the soil, prove that the soil can take in crops and grow crops. And so it's a really terrific story about this real story. And Mads Mikkelsen plays a really hardened, stoic, quiet man. It had reminiscent things between There Will Be Blood of Daniel Plainview, just on his own, digging, working, toiling away at the land with his bare hands, just doing it himself. And I felt that connection with this film, as well as this is from the director of Farewell My Queen, which is a really great Danish-French production about Marie Antoinette and her closeness with her closest aide. And, oh, I'm sorry, different film. Farewell My Queen is about Alicia Vikander is the recent queen to a new king who's terrible, and then Mads Mikkelsen plays their doctor, and she has a relationship with the doctor, and shit goes wrong. Great film. Same director, which is why Mads once again worked with him. This film, it's slow, it's meditative, but it's really rewarding. It reminds me of films that were made 60 years ago. It just takes its time. The characters are great, and it has really outstanding cinematography, great musical score, real locations, excellent work all around by the craftsmanship. And then it also has one of my favorite villains of the last couple of years. So there's a local, this guy, he's a magistrate, and he's basically in charge. He's like the governor of the land, essentially, because he's an aristocrat, he's elite, he's wealthy, he was born into it. And someone growing a farm on the Heath jeopardizes his power. And so he's trying to stop Mads Mikkelsen's character from successfully growing crops on the land. And so it's basically like a back and forth. Again, reminded me of Daniel Plainview and Eli Sunday, Paul Sande back and forth in that film, There Will Be Blood. Overall, really fantastic film. Very disturbing sequences, very heartfelt sequences. I really liked it.
All right. Well, my first watch of the week was a Cameron Crowe film, one that he wrote and directed, an original screenplay of his, I believe. I don't think it was adapted off anything. Vanilla Sky.
It's adapted.
Is it adapted?
It's based on Open Your Eyes, the Spanish film.
So, oh, that's why they say open your eyes so many times in the movie.
Yeah.
So in case you didn't know, Vanilla Sky is adapted from a Spanish novel of the name Open Your Eyes.
And it's a Spanish film.
And it's a Spanish film. That's what I just said. Spanish novel. Spanish film.
Someone did not do his research.
Abierto sus ojos. That means open your eyes in Spanish.
Penelope Cruz is in the original as well as this one.
So Penelope Cruz is actually in the original. Do you want to just do my review? Anthony, do you want to do it for me? I haven't seen this movie since it came out years and years ago when I was like a teenager. I didn't see it when it came out, but I think we eventually saw it.
Yeah, we saw it.
On like TV or Redbox or whatever. And it's a trip. I forgot the plot, or I forgot what the twist was at the end of the film. I won't spoil the twist for anyone who hasn't seen Vanilla Sky or hasn't seen it in a while, but I recommend watching. It's really cool. And the filmmaking's awesome. Tom Cruise is a star, obviously. Great cast. Cameron Diaz, Penelope Cruz, as well as the guy from My Name is Earl. I never remember his name. Is
Jason Lee.
Lee. Yeah, Jason Lee, as well as...
Oh, he plays the friend?
Yeah, he plays the friend, the writer friend. Tom Cruise plays this character. He's just basically sort of a nepo baby of a magazine empire, and he's inherited everything, and he's going through this horrific event where he's obsessed with his superficiality, materialism, and he gets in a horrific car crash where his face becomes deformed as well as he's on trial for murder. And it's great because I love movies where characters wear masks and we don't really know why until later in the films and the stories. I think, you know, Under the Skin's a great example of that. Goodnight Mommy's a great example of that. I really love when characters' faces are covered for mysterious reasons. I think it adds so much to the character and it shows so much of the talent of the actors and actresses when they perform, which just adds this mystique to the storytelling. And it's a trip. You know, it's very trippy. It's sort of got this odd tone where sometimes it feels sort of like a very sweet rom-com, and then other times it's the sci-fi epic, and there are ulterior motives going on, sort of a secret society kind of thing to an extent. But I really enjoyed it. I didn't love it, though, and I don't think it's aged too well because of that tone. Maybe in the 2000s, I think, it got away with that tone because it just sometimes it was felt like two different movies going on, if that makes sense, until there are cohesive moments where it felt really in swing and it was in going really well, great momentum. But sometimes, like I said, it's like this mystery, but then rom-com, mystery, then rom-com. And I think that just took me out of it a little bit. But overall, I thought the idea is really cool. It's really interesting. I wish they dove more into the science fiction element of it. But great imagery. I mean, shutting down Times Square, having Tom Cruise drive an old Ferrari in there, and it's completely empty. Really terrific stuff. I thought that's one of the coolest shots I've seen in a while. Because I remember they shut that down, but I haven't watched this movie since then. And I thought that was really cool. Visually, just stunning. And it's an awesome movie overall, but again, like, it's almost a great, great sci-fi film. It's almost there.
So it's a good remake, but it's one of those films where you can see why they remade it, but the original's better. Mm-hmm. So the original doesn't have that comedy, and it's more of a tragedy, which works better when you finally learn the huge reveal in the third act of the film. And then that works better. I agree that this is a problem with, like, Aloha, too. Cameron Crowe movies can be a little too soapy.
Because, yeah, but soapy, Aloha, fine. It's more of a romance film. There's a lot of romance in this movie, but still, it's a sci-fi mystery, so it's just teetering on the edge back and forth.
It's who's the older actor near the end? Is it Franklin Jell, isn't it? Or I'm trying to remember.
Which older actor? Which character?
There's like a, kind of like a, that happens with the big reveal.
Oh, well, Kurt Russell's in it.
Kurt Russell, that's who it is.
He's part of the reveal, that's right, but he's not the main revealer. Mm-hmm. Noah Taylor's in there, but it's really...
Oh, Noah Taylor from Truman Show, right?
What's his name? I can't remember his name, but he's got this look.
But the original film is fantastic, and it actually didn't come out too far before Vanilla Sky. It's just called Open Your Eyes in Spanish. I can't remember exactly.
It's probably Abierto Sus Ojos.
Yeah, that's it, I think. And it's a really fantastic science fiction film. It's an underrated one, but it's really well performed by the actors, But they did do a good job with Vanilla Sky. It's a good remake.
It's not solid. It's 43% Rotten Tomatoes. I wouldn't put it that low.
It's better than that.
Yeah, it's better than that. It's solid. Great cast, though, too. Michael Shannon's in this at really young.
Really?
Tilda Swinton's in it as
well. Oh, my God. What?
The cast is stacked.
What a cast. Okay, next up, let's get into our Letterboxd top 4 of 5 of our listeners. Now, if you'd like to get your top 4 read on the show, all you got to do is screenshot your Letterboxd top 4 and DM it to us on the gram, on that Instagram. So, first up, we have a great fan of the show. We got David Falco. Excellent top 4, pal. I love these. So, we have Dune Part 1.
Hell yeah.
Killing of a Sacred Deer. Amazing. Boogie Nights. Haven't seen that one many times.
Me neither.
I have that poster in my room. If you haven't seen Boogie Nights,
watch it now, tonight.
It's still, today, to this day, one of Paul Thomas Anderson's greatest films.
This weekend, watch it.
It's just like one of the most incredible screenplays.
I'm a star.
Too.
I'm a shining star.
I'm a bright, shining star.
It was him before Pearl.
Yeah, legit. And then, Inglourious Bastards.
This sounds like a
Film Boy. Recently, David has watched Guardians of the Galaxy, the original. Silence of the Lambs, 10 Things I Hate About You, which had its 25th anniversary last week.
Holy crap.
Yeah, 25 years. We're old, bro. And then, it was April 1st. And then, Lawless from John Hillcoat.
What a great...
Gave 5 stars. That's a great movie.
Wow, 5 stars for Lawless. That's a good that. Movie. It's an underrated gem. It really is. It's a cool movie.
Tom Hardy's grunts.
The cardigans, too.
Yeah, the cardigans.
Great cardigans.
The hats. Movie. Man, that was a good movie. I remember seeing that.
Moonshining.
Guy Pearce is a great villain in that.
It's Jessica Chastain, too, right?
Yes, it is Jessica Chastain. Chastain.
Chastain.
Chastain. We both said her name wrong.
Chastain. I said it correctly.
You said Tashjane first.
I did
and
not.
And then you corrected yourself.
Nope. Never done that before in my life.
All right, moving on to...
I just got so hungry for no reason. I don't know why. I just ate lunch, too.
You just ate like a pound of chicken. I saw you do it.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm hungry again.
Well, it's because you ran.
True.
Yeah, that's why. All right, second up, we got Timothy Thomas. Sounds like a superhero,
man. I know, that's a cool name.
Timmy Thomas.
Timothy Thomas, watch out. What kind of superpower is he going to get?
Man, for real. All right, first up, we have La La Land.
Excellent.
Great poster.
Excellent.
Shawshank.
Excellent.
Interstellar.
Excellent.
And Grand Budapest.
This sounds like a film boy.
Timothy's bio says, just a man with a dream.
That's right. Just a film boy with a dream.
A film boy with a dream. Fuck yeah. And then recently he's watched Insomnia from Christopher Nolan, Get Out, When Harry Met Sally, and Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Nothing but bangers.
Great movies.
Nothing but bangers.
Thanks for sending that in, Tim Film Boy. Tim Film Boy.
Just either Film Boy or Tim Anthony.
Oh my God. I screenshotted this person and cut off their name.
How could you do that?
Holy shit. I'm sorry. Oop. Awkward.
Who is it?
I don't know who it is.
You don't remember who it is?
I don't know who it is. This was a screenshot September 24th. I'm still going to read their top 4.
Okay. This is all Anthony's fault, just so you know. So blame Anthony, whoever you are. I would have never done this to you, but Anthony clearly doesn't care about you. Sorry. From the bottom of my heart. I know Anthony doesn't care.
Oh, my God. Wait, this is my screen. No, it's me. Never mind. Never mind.
It's your top
it's
four?
My. It's a screenshot of our page.
Oh.
That I accidentally put in Letterboxd. Well, never mind.
So
we're good.
All that for nothing.
All that for nothing.
I still don't care about you.
I didn't skip anyone because next up we have Steven Jasenik. What's
Steven!
Up, pal? What's up, dude?
How you doing?
First up, we have Amelie.
Amazing pick. I have a poster of Amelie.
Yeah. It's an amazing movie.
It really is.
Yeah. Old Boy.
Mm-hmm.
He's just doing your favorite foreign films. 13 Assassins.
Hell yeah.
That's a banger. Absolute banker. Bonafide banker.
Banker?
Banger.
Banger.
And then, man, let the right one in.
Here we go.
This is a cool top 4.
That's one of the most interesting we've seen in a
all
while.
All foreign films. All great films. Let the right one in. Still probably my pick for best vampire movie of all time.
It's up there for sure.
It's a great film.
It's definitely up there.
And then recently, Steven has watched Mortal Kombat, Elemental, Let the Right One In, and The Creator.
The Creator.
All right. Moving on to Britain. What's up, Britain Inkley?
Hey, Britain.
Just a fat man trying to make his way through the galaxy.
Aren't we all?
Yes, indeedy.
Also, Steven's a film boy. Film boy.
Film boy. Film boy.
Britain, all right. What's Britain got?
Britain's got Empire Strikes Back, The Godfather.
Hell yeah.
Secret Life of Walter Mitty and The Good Will Hunting. You know who this is? Film boy.
This is a film boy.
Recently, Britain has watched Rosemary's Baby, The Babadook, Gangs of New York, and Inglourious Basterds.
I want to hang out with
you. Yeah. This is a film boy if I ever saw one.
Oh, my God.
Britain film boy Inkley. Well done, son.
What a list. What a week you've been having.
All right. Also, my screenshot of Britain, it looked like he was listening to our podcast while he screenshotted it to us.
Love to see that.
Look at that. I can see the waveform.
So cool.
He was listening to Letterboxd Recap. Fuck yeah. That's awesome. There's no better way to do it. Yeah, listen to Letterboxd Recap while you send us a screenshot. It's amazing. Next up, our final listener is Dylan Quinn, film bro, new to film.
Hey, Dylan. Film boy.
Film boy. Film boy. All right, Dylan's top four is Inception.
Mm-hmm.
The Social Network.
Mm-hmm.
Another Get Out today. And then, I'm not fucking leaving.
I'm not fucking leaving.
Steve.
We love to see Marty.
Steve.
Steve Madden.
Woman's Shoes. I think Dylan is a film boy.
Same name of the movie, Anthony. Not everyone understands our references.
Sorry. The Wolf of Wall Street.
The Wolf of Wall Street. Thank you. Not everyone is you.
Everyone. I mean, I've said that reference enough where if you listen to the show, you know we're referencing.
I think plenty of people who are casual listeners probably are like, what are they doing? I don't get this at all.
I literally do it almost every episode.
But not everyone listens to every episode.
That's true.
Some people just come in and out, you know? Some people only probably listen to Letterboxd Recap, and they don't understand your...
Steve Adams!
Steve! All right? Steve. Maybe they've only seen Wolf once.
You know what I have to say to that?
Steve! Either way, lots of great...
Recently, Dylan has watched A Star is Born, 4.5 stars, Oppenheimer, The Thing, and The Killing from Stanley Kubrick.
Hell yeah.
Amazing, amazing movie. Highly recommend checking it out. Thanks for sending that in, Dylan. Bunch of film boys this week. Love to see it. Great top fours all around. Now, James, since you actually have a good number of movies this week, how about you take it away with your next one?
What's that supposed to
mean? You know what it means.
I take offense to that. All right, my next watch was a Danny Boyle film. Last week I did Trainspotting. This week I watched 127 Hours, which is so well made. And... you know, I hadn't seen this movie since it was in theaters back in 2010.
Oh my God.
It's an old film.
Fuck.
Based on a true story, obviously. And I thought when I saw it in theaters, it was so goddamn good. It was really well made. It's only 3.5 on Letterboxd, which I think is pretty low. And it's an incredible true story. You know, this guy, he is an extreme sport person. His name's Aaron Ralston, mountain climber, dirt biker, or mountain biker as well. And it's a survival story where he was on a hike by himself. He didn't really tell anyone where he was going. And he falls down this cliff, this little alleyway in these cliffs. I don't know what you would call it. And his arm gets stuck inside a boulder between two cliffs.
It's like a crevice.
Yeah. It's like a little tunnel.
Yeah.
And so the true story of, we all remember this movie when it came out, where he has to cut off his own arm to survive. And he did it in real life. It's incredible. And he's completely isolated. He's trapped. Even though in the film he runs into a couple people on this very remote, isolated area he drives to in the middle of the night. And I was so unprepared for watching it again because I'm good with gore, you know, but sometimes some gore gets me really hard. Even like the fingernail in Immaculate. I was like, oh my God, I can't watch this.
You're not good with flesh being torn.
If it's quick, I'm fine. But if it's like a slow thing, it's tough for me, man. It really is. And this whole movie, I was like, I'm going to watch 127 Hours. This movie's awesome. I haven't seen it since 2010. And I'm watching it, and the first 10 minutes go by, and it's got so much energy, so much momentum. It's really great filmmaking. It's a lot of fun. And it's an exciting opening act. But then my stomach started going, oh, it's coming soon. It's coming,
I mean,
Jim.
I remember everyone thought of this. Everyone knew this movie was, it's the movie where the guy cut his arm off came out.
Yeah. And so I was just waiting, and part of me was like, oh, do I keep watching this? Am I going to be able to get through this 30 minutes of him going through this arm sequence? Because he has multiple moments where he tries at first to do that quick stab, and then he kind of gives up, and then he gets more involved. So it's kind of a back and forth, and his arm just goes through different stages of being torn apart, basically.
Oh, my God.
Breaking the bone, and the worst part is biting the nerve going down his arm, which is terrifying, and that gets me the most. But overall, it's really well done once I get in the headspace of, it's a fake arm, obviously, but it's shot so well that it feels so real.
He also does a great job using different kinds of cameras.
And
he'll do, inserts and POVs or
stuff? Well, yeah, but because the guy, Aaron chronicled the whole thing. Uh-huh. He has his little camcorder. He takes little selfies, little photos. So it's a mix of that stuff as well as when they were making the movie, the real Aaron let them go through the tapes that he has kept private of the things he was saying to himself or recording while he's while he was trapped. He was filming himself basically as like a little history of what happened or just recording what happened to him. You know what I mean?
He did like a diary?
Kind of like this is what happened and this is what I'm going through. And so he's kept those private, but he showed Danny Boyle and James Franco those tapes for the filmmaking process. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure a lot of it was used for writing the dialogue and the moments because it gets very emotional, gets very deep. But it's a really beautiful story because he has this vision of a family and has a vision of having a son. And that's what gets him going after he's given up on trying to get his arm off. And that motivates him to actually do it, mm-hmm. which he does. And then it's the true story. Great. The vision came true. He has a beautiful family, he has a son. And it kind of came true, this sort of prescient moment he had.
That's interesting because it wasn't like he had a family back home to survive for.
Yeah.
It was like he's just by himself mm-hmm. and he's alone in life. And so how do you still maintain that motivation, and using that fantasy really helped him go over the edge?
It's insane.
Yeah.
Insane story, but it's really well made. It's a lot of fun, like getting to that point, because it's cool. He's out dirt biking in the middle of nowhere. He's doing some mountain climbing. He runs into these two friends and takes them to the secret part of the area with this underground pool. It's fun mm-hmm. until that point, and then it gets very serious. But Danny Boyle is such a talented director, and you know I love his movies. And I think I brought up recently how he brings this great kinetic energy to his films, as well as he really understands humanity and understands people. It's a great opening montage of humanity and populations, mass praying, sports events, just sort of just understands culture really well in his films.
I love that. I haven't seen that in a minute. I might have to throw it on soon.
Check it out, man. It's still really, really good.
He's a very inventive filmmaker. Mm. He always does so much with his cameras, and which is he's just like experimenting.
Yeah, and Franco's awesome in it. I think it's
best performance.
It might be.
Best performance. All right, next up, I watched a Steven Spielberg film. It's the only Steven Spielberg film I've never watched.
Jaws?
Ironically, it's a new one. I don't know. And I feel like embarrassed that I didn't see it in theaters.
You still hadn't seen... This was your first time seeing this?
I had never seen it. West Side Story. And within 5 minutes, I was like... Within the first shot, I was like, why didn't I fucking see this?
I told
theaters?
You so many times to go see it. Yeah. I'm like, because I know you're not a huge musical fan. I'm not a huge musical fan either. I love some of the recent ones. Like, I really liked Wonka and West Side Story. But I remember seeing it. I'm like, Anthony, you have to see West Side Story just for the filmmaking. Just see it for that.
And I want to try and see if it's playing anytime in the next couple of months in a theater, because it was that sensational. I gave it 5 stars. And I think it might be my top 10 of Spielberg movies. It's an incredible film. It's just an incredible example of a master filmmaker and a master cinematographer in Janusz Kaminski, just in the production team, the craftsmanship of this film is absolutely unbelievable. And it was like on par with like the spectacle of a big blockbuster, how big it is. You know what I mean? It doesn't need to be action scenes. You don't need to have explosions. I think people, not everyone, but I think some general audiences, when they think of spectacle, it has to be explosions or big sci-fi or a big fight. You know what I mean? I think that something like the dance number outside for the I Want to Be in America is one of the biggest incredible spectacles I've seen in the last 10 years. It was absolutely earth-shattering. And what was cool is, obviously, him and Giannis have been working together for a long time, and they have their usual look to the film. However, they got very creative with this, with color, with light, more so than they usually do. And on top of that, so I Want to Live in America, that incredible dance sequence with the Cuban characters, that was shot all outdoors. And with the harsh sunlight and the color correction they used and the film stock they used, it looked like it was a Technicolor film from 1955. It looked like it was like a Hitchcock movie. The look, the color palette of it. And I've never seen a movie, there's only one other movie that's done this that I can think of in recent memory, and that's the Coen brothers did it with Hail Caesar, with the Ralph Fiennes directing that scene with Ansel, Elgort. No. Alden Ehrenreich. Oh,
okay.
Alden Ehrenreich. And it's like, would that tour that simple? Would that tour that simple? And the way the Coen brothers and Roger Deakins filmed that scene was, they built a real set that looked just like a set from the 40s with a shit ton of lights overhead and they filmed it that way with harsh shadows. And it felt like when you see that scene, you feel like you're watching a movie from the 1950s. And I felt like that when I watched this film, especially that sequence, which was absolutely unbelievable. But on top of that, there's this, some of the best cinematography I've seen in years, whether it be like that huge overhead with the shadows of both squads, you know, walking into that salt warehouse, and their shadows are like stretching across the ground. Beautiful use of light, especially with the stained glass windows when the two leads go into that little chapel. I was just absolutely floored by it. The opening sequence, Spielberg does an unbelievable 1:30 wonder, showcasing the entire ravaged exterior of the neighborhood that's been torn down and being rebuilt. Unbelievable long take that ends on one of the members of the Jets opening the door from the ground. There's just so much to it. A bunch of great wonders that just fly under the radar, and Spielberg is just, he really is. I watched this movie and I was like, is Spielberg the greatest director who ever lived? I mean, it's movies like this that make you really think that, because he's done everything, and now he's done a musical, and not just a musical. He made one of the most impressive musicals I've ever seen in my life. And also, this is the movie, I've never been a huge fan of musicals, and one of the main reasons is that when people start singing, it kind of takes me out of the immersion of the story.
He hates singing.
I love singing, but with this movie, it suddenly clicked, and I understood. It, same thing with dance numbers. Like, I love them. I love La La Land. I love Singing in the Rain. They're fantastic. I've just never been a big musical person. But it was the dance fight between the Ansel Elgort and his best friend, Riff. So it was Riff and, I can't remember Ansel's name in it off the top of my head. And they're fighting over the gun that Riff had just purchased. And it wasn't a fight at first. It was like a dance. And they were dancing. It was a two dance, and they were just going back and forth. And they were doing these moves, and they slowly progressed to be more physical, more aggressive, and it led into them actually fighting, and literally fighting for the gun. But before that, it was like a playful teasing of the gun. And then when that scene happened, like 10 seconds into that dance, I was like, oh, the dance is the fight. It's a parallel. It's a dance version of the fight. So in a normal movie, you'd see them fighting the whole time, but in this movie, it's a musical, so you see them basically fighting through dance. And when that scene happened, I was like, a light bulb in my head, and I was like, oh, I get it now. I get it. And then I thought that was just an unbelievable performance, those two actors. And then from then on, I was just like, this movie's just phenomenal. And Rachel Zegler's fantastic. What a great debut. This is one of the most impressive debut performances I've seen in recent memory. Like, she's absolutely fantastic. Steals every scene she's in. Cameron loves her. She's got an unbelievable voice. And then the whole cast did a phenomenal job. But I was just absolutely unexpectedly blown away by this movie.
Nice. Anthony's now a musical boy.
Duh, duh, duh.
My next watch was a silly comedy. I watched Horrible Bosses.
Yes.
From 2011, directed by Seth Gordon, starring a great cast. Jason Bateman, Charlie Day, Jason Sudeikis, Kevin Spacey, Jennifer Aniston, Colin Farrell, Jamie Foxx, and Donald Sutherland. You've all seen this movie. It's hysterical. It's raunchy. Before raunchy comedies were cringe, they were still great. And this is about these three guys who are best friends. They have very different jobs, and they all want to kill their bosses for different reasons. Charlie Day, he's a dental assistant, and his boss is sexually harassing him constantly.
She's very a squirter.
And then Jason Bateman, he's been working at this... What is it?
It's packaging company.
No, Jason. No. Oh, yeah, Jason. Yeah, Jason Bateman.
Oh, office.
Works at this office.
It's brokerage or something?
Something like that, yeah. And Kevin Spacey's his boss, who's an absolute jerk. He's trying to get this promotion, which he can't get. And Kevin Spacey's just messing with him the whole time. And then Bateman, he works at a great company, has a great boss, played by Don Sutherland. His boss dies. Then his cokehead son, played by Colin Farrell, takes over the company, inherits everything. And Bateman was going, I mean, Sudeikis was going to get the position at some point before he died. And he was like a father to him. They were like a father and son, the son he never had. And so the three of them, they just can't take their bosses anymore. And so they try to kill them, and they enlist the help of Jamie Foxx's character. And it's hysterical.
What's his name? Motherfucker?
Yeah, Motherfucker.
And then Colin Farrell.
Motherfucker Jones.
Motherfucker Jones. Colin Farrell wants to fire the person in the wheelchair because he doesn't like the way they look.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's terrible. it's so funny, though. It's so goddamn funny. It's a great idea, original, and I loved it. It was a good laugh.
I watched it last year. It's got a fantastic comedic first hour. Yeah. It's really
most
funny.
Comedies do. Yeah. Like most comedies, they're good stuffs in the first 40 minutes.
It's so funny. And those three are great together. They're a great trio.
Yeah.
And Jamie Foxx is hysterical in that movie.
Motherfucker Jones.
Motherfucker Jones. Oh my God. Oh my. Jennifer Aniston, that's one of her funniest roles, I think. She's great in that.
Yeah.
Everyone's phenomenal.
She's always been a great comedic actress. I mean, she's on Friends for fucking 10 years.
I love how Sudeikis is like a womanizer who doesn't really do much to womanize, but it just happens.
Fucking Meghan Markle's in this movie.
Meghan Markle's
in
it?
She plays a FedEx girl. So it's opening in the first 20 minutes.
Really?
Meghan Markle, she plays a FedEx girl. You know, she's in the more of it, but she delivers a package to the warehouse that he's working at. I was like, it's fucking Meghan Markle.
And Kevin Spacey's wife, did you recognize her? She's the girl from Happy Gilmore, the woman from Happy Gilmore, who now she's been on Modern Family.
Oh, that's right.
So she's been killing it on, I think it's Modern Family.
That's right, man.
It's a great cast. Great cast.
Yeah, Julie Bowen.
Yes, Julie Bowen. That's her name. Fun stuff.
That's a good one.
All right, next up, I watched a French film from 2023 that I wanted to see in theaters, but it was playing in Santa Monica. And I was like, I don't want to drive an hour across the city at rush hour. And so I rented it. It was only $5 on Amazon. And it's The Taste of Things, which is now my second favorite food movie. It
my
is.
My second favorite
my,
civil
my
engineer.
My second favorite civil engineer, Madison Square Garden. The Taste of Things is a phenomenal film. If you love food, and if you like watching things like Chef's Table, if you like watching Gordon Ramsay, not the Hell's Kitchen, but the nice Gordon Ramsay cooking at home, which is a great, great content. If you love watching food TikTok videos, this movie has some of the most incredibly photographed food I've ever seen in my life. It's incredible cinematography, plating. It's basically a celebration of French cuisine, a lot of French cuisine that we're not aware of. And it's a really beautiful love story, too. So the leads are Juliette Binoche and this French actor who actually he's the student in The Piano Teacher. So he's like in his 50s now, but he's fantastic. Hold on, I just got to Google The Taste of Things cast just so I can say their names. All right, and Benoit Magimel, who plays Dodin. And so Juliette Binoche plays Eugenie, and Eugenie and Dodin have been living in the same estate for a long time. He owns the estate. He's a wealthy aristocrat elitist who loves food. He loves cuisine. You don't really know much about his background except that he has a lot of money and he has a tremendous amount of influence in the world of food in France. And Juliette Binoche, Eugenie, has been his personal cook for over 20 years. And what he and his friends, what they do is they travel from famous cook to famous cook and even local unknown cooks. And they just love to eat food. And he loves to cook food for his friends. And he and Eugenie have been working on recipes for over 2 decades. So they've built this very close relationship. They're intimate with each other, but they're not they have never really classified it as a relationship. She doesn't want to get married. He's desperate to marry her. He's desperate to make her his wife because he loves her so intensely. And she loves him too, but
my wife.
My wife.
May I want you to be my wife.
My wife. Sorry. And so it's about him not so much wearing her down, but making him letting her open up to realize that it's okay to be loved and to accept that love. And you don't have to put up a wall behind yourself. There's a really beautiful scene because what she does is she's essentially, you wouldn't say a servant, but she's his cook. And when he has guests over, she makes these like beautiful 7-course meals, like fine dining meals. And it's just a beautiful relationship they have, but it's a blend of personal and professional. And so at one point he turns the tables and prepares an extravagant, beautiful, like Michelin star meal for her. And it's like really the thing that really makes her understand how much he loves her. It's a beautiful film. It's also very tragic as well. And it celebrates cuisine in a way that very few films have. And also it's just like, I just love watching food being cooked, especially in such a beautiful way. The film opens with probably, I would say, a 15-minute scene of just them two and their two assistants, these two young women who are their chef, their cooking assistants, just cooking in the kitchen. And it's set in the late 1800s, so it's all gas and fire. And also they use embers from the fireplace to heat the stovetops, which is really cool. But you just see them prepare these incredible meals, which I thought was great, because in movies you generally see just the beautiful meal. But they really showed every step of every process of every dish. And it was just such a sight to behold. So if you like things like Chef's Table and you love watching cooking content, I couldn't recommend enough The Taste of Things. It just came out, and you can watch it. You can rent it on Amazon Prime right now for $5.
All right.
I gave it 4.5 stars.
All right. I'm going to do my next film, which is a murder mystery noir.
Ooh.
Released in 1997, directed by Curtis Hanson. L.A. Confidential, which has a stellar cast. Russell Crowe, Guy Pearce, Kevin Spacey, Kim Basinger, Danny DeVito, James Cromwell. Insane, insane cast. And it's about Los Angeles in the 1950s, where we have corrupt police force, conspiracies, and mysteries, and murders. And we have three main detectives who are all trying to uncover this mystery from their different means. You know, Kevin Spacey plays this celebrity detective, womanizer, stylish. He's a star. He's like a movie star on the LAPD. And then we have Russell Crowe, who's basically sort of the muscle for the old-timers. He's this old school cop. And then we have Guy Pearce, who plays sort of this new knight in shining armor, do-gooder. Boy Scout of the Force, who is not afraid to send cops to jail to get ahead. And he's trying to clean up the police force, which you understand is admirable. But also he's putting people behind the bars. But also a lot of these cops are so corrupt and dirty that they deserve to be behind bars. So he is an enemy of the police force, but he's a rising star. And the three of these men are basically going by their own means, trying to uncover this mystery. The filmmaking is excellent. It's so good. I love noirs. I love mystery films. I love investigation films. It's sexy. It's sleek and gritty at the same time. There are some great sequences. Russell Crowe is such a standout in this movie. 1997, it's before Gladiator. He's still a rising star in America. He's big in Australia, but, you know, this is one of those movies, I think, in L.A. and Hollywood that really got him known by audiences. And then
it was
like
Gladiator. Right after Romper Stomper, I think.
Yeah, right after that. And he's so young in this movie, but he's got this like great character. He's like a bulldog, or like a dog that when you let him off his leash, he won't stop attacking. He's awesome. And everyone's awesome in this movie. Everyone's terrific. And I can't recommend it enough. If you've never seen L.A. Confidential, if you haven't seen it in a while, lots of great classical filmmaking techniques, so much great production design. I mean, so many of the interiors and exteriors, even though it was shot in the 1997, there's still a lot of great places that you can film in Los Angeles that have that old town feel. The cars are excellent. The houses, everything's terrific in this movie. And it's Curtis Hanson's a great director. He made 8 Mile, but he also made L.A. Confidential, which I think is 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's a really loved movie critically.
It's so good.
Letterboxd 4.1, but man, I haven't seen this movie in a while, and I felt like watching it because I was just perusing. Yeah, 99% on Rotten Tomatoes, 8.2 on IMDb, 91% Metacritic score. So
that's crazy.
This movie's, it's really brilliant. It's so, so well made. It's a classic film. We'll never get movies made like this again. I know we bring that up a lot, but this is a movie style we'll never see again.
Yeah, and they tried it with Gangster Squad, and it didn't work out.
Nah, not even close.
It didn't perform well at all.
It's an awesome movie.
It's fantastic. I love that movie. And it's got some great moments of violence, like the elevator shot.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Danny DeVito's so funny.
He's so funny.
Yeah, yeah. He's really hysterical.
He's so charismatic.
He plays a magazine journalist and photographer.
Man, I love that movie. I watched it either early this year or late last year recently. It's a great movie. All right, next up, my next watch is actually something we watched together. It was a horror film. This is called The Pact.
Nice.
It came out in 2012. I had never seen it. I feel like I remember the trailer, and I remember hearing about it years ago, but it's just one of those horror movies that you just never watched. It was recommended to us by our friend Nathan, and it was a fun movie. I gave it 3 stars. I didn't love it, but it had a fantastic final 20 minutes, I would say. And it's basically about this girl who, after her mother passed away, she's experiencing these hauntings from a ghost who was beheaded. And for some reason, this ghost is haunting her. And eventually, this is coinciding with there's this serial killer that's been on the loose and killing people for years now all over the West Coast. And eventually, she learns that the ghost is trying to communicate her for a specific reason. It was really
With a connection to her mother. Her deceased mother.
With a very low budget, they did a solid job with this film.
I mean, if you're an independent filmmaker and you want to see how to effectively use $400,000, watch The Pact. $400,000 budget. It looks way more expensive than that. It's got a slow start, and it's not a perfect movie. But once it gets going, it gets really good. There's some great scary moments, great stunt work, great wire work that's really convincing. I love ghost movies, and this is a solid one. But they did a really great job using every penny of that budget to make a solid horror film, indie horror film. It was very successful. It did solid at the box office, great return on investment. They made a sequel. Haven't seen the sequel, but I think they did a really great job, the filmmakers, with just $400,000. It looks great.
And I wasn't fully on board for the first hour or so, but then a major reveal happened, and I was like, that's great. And I was just fully into it then. So it's got a great third act. Also, Casper Van Dien's in it, who played, obviously famous for Starship Troopers, playing Johnny Rico. And we were just like, we were looking at him for like the first couple of scenes. We were like, who is this guy? And then it just clicked to me. I was like, that's fucking Johnny from Starship Troopers. So funny to see him in a movie.
Did you know that they made sequels to Starship Troopers? He's in the third one.
They made sequels?
Yeah, so he's in a movie called Starship Troopers 3 Marauders. It came out in 2008.
Marauders. 2008? That's fairly recent. Damn.
I've never seen it.
Starship Troopers. Oh, yeah. Marauder.
Marauders.
Yeah. 2008, Edward Neumer. Man. Starship Troopers is great. 3.8 on Letterboxd.
Starship Troopers?
Yeah.
It's just a loved movie, man.
We should do an episode on it.
I think so, too. Let's do it soon.
Let's do Starship. Why not, man?
I'm fucking down.
Why not? I haven't seen it in forever. And I remember we went to the New Bev and we saw science fiction film. I can't remember what it was, but they played a trailer for Starship Troopers, and the whole crowd erupted into applause.
Saw Tron Legacy.
That's what it was, yeah.
All right, well, the next movie we also watched together, we had a double feature night.
What was your rating of it?
3 stars.
Nice.
But then we watched When Evil Lurks, this Argentinian film that blew up a little bit last year on social media. A lot of people were talking about it. Finally got around to watching it, and the hype is legit. I love this film. It's incredibly original. It's really well made. It's so fucked up in the best ways possible. I gave it 4 stars. I love this sort of universe that this movie creates where, you know, Christianity and religion, Catholicism, all religions are dead. And there are just demons around. They're kind of rare, but they're around.
It's evil, a thing that happens.
Evil is around. And humans are trying to survive in this world that has evil in it. It's about these locals in this small town where someone has become infected, possessed, basically, and this rot is going to spread throughout the town, sort of like a zombie feel in terms of something spreading, but it's just evil spreads, and it corrupts people and takes over their bodies and possesses them, and it travels to more and more people, and if you try to kill one of the evil possessed people without the right ritual, then it's even worse, and it spreads even worse. It's like a disease. It's really cool.
It reminded me of The Wailing.
Yeah, exactly.
With the spreading.
Yeah, you're right. And I thought it was awesome and great filmmaking, excellent acting. The gore was solid. Some shocking moments. I screamed out loud a few times. And I think it was almost, it could have been a perfect horror movie, but some things in the third act happened that really, I was like, oh man, it could have been a lot better. It's kind of
a bit of a letdown, easy out
in sort of a way, if that makes sense for some of the things. But overall, the characters were awesome. I really was behind the whole movie, and I think it was just really well made. I really enjoyed When Evil Lurks.
Yeah, I'm glad I've seen it because it has such a great poster, and I know a lot of people were talking about it. And it was a very enjoyable horror film. The first 40 minutes is absolutely fantastic. It was unbelievable, and I've adored it. And like you said, it has such a great first half. And it is a little slightly underwhelming, the eventual direction the story went. And it has a few pretty glaring plot holes that I think, for me, just put it down a peg. We're actually going to do a Patreon bonus episode review of this film, and we'll get in-depth on When Evil Lurks that comes out tomorrow. So stay tuned for that episode. But overall, it was a really fun horror movie. Great gore. Really fun tone to it too, is exciting. There's some very exciting moments to this movie. Very original. I've never seen anything quite like it before. And overall, great film. And I gave it 3.5 stars. Overall, very good movie. A bit of a disappointing second half and third act. But that being said,
I wouldn't
said,
say disappointing. It's just it could have. It was going up.
It was almost an all timer.
It was. It could have been like this decade a top tier horror film.
Agreed.
It was almost there.
It was almost there. We'll get into why it didn't quite hit that in our episode on Patreon.
I only have one movie left. How about you?
I have one movie left as well.
I'll go first. So
we have so much in common.
I went and saw, for the third time, Dune Part 2 last night at 70mm IMAX at the Universal City Walk, which is the sickest theater because the screen is 80 feet. It's so
massive.
So big. It's freaking, it's like four stories tall, but 80 feet corner to corner. It's an enormous screen and a great theater. It sounds awesome. And I haven't seen Dune since we did our private screening with IMAX back in fucking, what was that, like a month ago?
Yeah, that was in February.
Wow, yeah, it's a long time ago. It's been a minute, more than a month since I've seen this movie. And obviously it still slaps, it's still terrific, and I had a blast, and it was so good to see again. To still see it in film, it's really exciting, and it was a pretty good amount of people in that theater. It was like half full. And that movie's been out for fucking 2 months now, which is awesome.
It's very Oppenheimer-esque.
Yeah. So it's still doing really well. It's over $650 million at the box office globally, which I'm so happy about. And the movie's sensational. Of course, we've done episodes on it. And, you know, I'm sure many of you listening to this movie have seen it more than once. And what was funny was because of some of the memes of this movie, specifically with Stilgar going, "Lisa, I'll keep!" So there's that great video gif of in the third act after him, after... Obviously, spoiler warning, if you haven't seen Dune Part 2 for some reason, after Paul kills Fade and he survives and he pulls that knife out, the camera cuts to Stilgar and he goes, "Lisa Nalgaib! Lisa Nalgaib!" When that happened, everyone in the theater erupted with laughter. It was actually a really funny moment. At first, I was like, "Oh, that kind of sucks." But then I was like, "It's fun. It's good
because
time.
The meme made
because
it funny."
Exactly. That's what I mean. Because everyone there has seen the movie already, or they've seen the memes, or both. It was a really funny moment, and everyone, even though it's the climax of the movie, everyone laughed at it.
Yeah.
And obviously, they didn't intend for that to happen, but because they made Stilgar so fanatical in the movie, it actually plays as comedy now. And it was cool to experience a rewatch for the third time. And I loved it, you know. It's great filmmaking, and the opening, man, still to this day. Jaw on the floor. And I always, on the third watch, I still was forgetting about Fade Rautha until Princess Irulan's talking to Reverend Mother Oheim, and they're talking about how Paul might still be alive on Arrakis, and Reverend Mother's like telling her to don't speak to anyone about this, especially don't let your father's ears hear this. And then she's telling her, "We have other prospects. Other Paul Atreides is not the only person in our list of lineage." And
he's
psychotic. She brings up Fade Rautha, and Irulan's, "Fade Rautha, he's psychotic." And then I was like, "Oh my God, it's about to happen." And then we go to Harkonnen's Geti Prime. And oh my God, I was so amped. And bro, Fade Rautha is the best part of this movie. I was so hyped for it. But then watching the sandworm ride for Paul the first time when he rides Shai-Hulud, that was also, I think, the second best part of the film.
And learning about the stunt.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was watching how the dunes fall apart
because
we learned, because of you and your research, that how they made the dunes from the center point fall apart, like the worm was crashing through a dune with the trucks pulling the large cylinders from underneath the dune. And I was like, "That's genius." Mm-hmm. And it makes total sense. And it looked really, really excellent. So I was watching this movie from a sort of analytical standpoint, from all the things I've learned about it and from watching it and trying to figure out how they do stuff. But man, and I was trying to spot which things were miniatures, which weren't. And I had a blast, man. It was so fun.
Man, that's great. Lots of right. How are the right angles in Geti Prime?
Saw a few. But okay. Also, bro, when Fade came on screen, oh my God, everyone was excited.
Yeah,
I was like fist pumping.
That's how was that? How was that theme again?
Slaps after list because so hard.
I actually should see it again because I've listened to the music so much. I'd love to hear it again.
Fade Rautha goes so fucking hard in that movie.
Yeah.
Oh my God, best. Oh my God, fucking love Fade
so
Rautha.
So you actually forgot about a film that we saw.
What I miss?
The monkey. We saw Monkey Man. Bro.
Oh my God! I forgot Monkey Man.
Did you not log it?
No, I forgot. I don't. I'm bad about logging.
Shit. So we saw Monkey Man, and it was an amazing screening. They had a little red carpet. We got some good photos. James got a fantastic Getty photo.
Oh my God!
You got like the best photo that's ever been taken of you.
It's up there. It's pretty good.
It's great.
Pretty good photo.
You look fantastic.
Thanks, man.
And so they hosted this private screening at an art center in Hollywood. Really fantastic venue. Beautiful theater. I loved the whole interior. It's really fantastic. And Dev Patel and the cast introduced the film. And then there was an after party afterwards where we got to see bunch of cool behind the scenes images. They had a cool bar. They had some food. We did a little interactive photo booth. All around, it was a really fun night. And then Dev, the man himself, was actually standing 6 feet from us. We were going to say hi, but he got mobbed. He got mobbed by people. And so we're like, okay, we won't say hi. He looks like he's just in the trenches.
He's like, oh my God, I don't want to be here.
He's in the trenches. People were just, oh my God, I love you. So, but it was cool to stand that close to him. We were 6 feet from him. It was pretty wild. And it was a phenomenal film. I gave Monkey Man 4 stars. And I wrote, that knife kill with his teeth was chef's kiss. A brutal and visually striking debut film from Dev Patel, filled with blood-soaked violence and emotional depth, excellent fight sequences, and a commanding lead performance, lead to a satisfying conclusion. Dev knocked it out of the park. It was really fun. It was exciting. It was unique. It was really glorious to behold. Excellent stunt work. Excellent fight sequences. Great choreography. Very impactful violence. It was fun to see Charlton Heston play in this film. He had a great little role. In Dev Patel, in one of his best performances ever, might be his best performance as an actor. He really just gave it his all. You can tell he put everything into this. Visually, really well done. A very, very fun movie. It's just an exciting action movie. And the use of culture, the use of color, the use of light, really great stuff all around. I had a really fun time. And I was very emotionally invested, which is pretty rare for an action movie character to be that emotionally invested in the lead.
I really enjoyed this film. It was so cool. It was original. And, whenever there's a new big action movie coming on, I'm always afraid that it's going to mirror John Wick too much. But there's actually some cool references to it in the movie.
Yeah.
And I was worried. I'm always looking at choreo. I'm like, is it going to look like John Wick? Because we've had so many, duplicates or people trying to make movies like John Wick, which it's just been done too many times. Like, I won't name names, but there's some movies that I don't even want to see because I know it's going to be a John Wick ripoff. But this one was very original with its choreo, and the stunt team did a really, really great job. There's some awesome kills, great gore, and the structure is excellent. It's sort of just like a great classic action movie with the structure where we have, the hero's failure, the hero's journey. We have great training montages. It's in a great third act, and I thought it was excellent. And for a debut, I think Dev Patel did a great job, given the circumstances, especially that they had so much trouble with the production and with COVID and lockdowns and borders being shut down and equipment breaking and filming some things with smartphones and GoPros when they were trying to obviously use more cinema-grade cameras like they were for the most of the film. Mm-hmm. I think, it shows a lot of grit and determination from now a new filmmaker who's been such a great actor for so long. I mean, he's in some terrific movies, and Dev Patel's, someone we've always admired when he's in movies. We love movies like The Green Knight. We love
Lion,
Slumdog Millionaire. He's a terrific actor. And so it's awesome. I love to see, actors, if they're doing a debut and they make a movie that's worth seeing and a movie that you can tell they put their blood, sweat, and tears into, rather than, a debut from an actor and it's seemed like an easy job.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But Dev Patel fucking bled for this movie and worked his ass off and probably didn't sleep for half a year, but he pulled it off, and kudos to him. It's such a terrific debut, and I really hope people see it and check it out this weekend. It's coming out. It's a lot of fun. It was epic.
Yeah, it was fun. There was a lot of charm to it, and I really enjoyed it. What was your Letterboxd rating?
4 stars.
4 stars. Yeah, I agree.
8 out of 10.
Yeah,
it's excellent job.
It's a great film.
Excellent job.
Great job.
All right, that's all I got for movies. Thanks for reminding me of Monkey Man.
Wasn't it cool seeing him that close?
Yeah, I know. We were like right. He was like looking in our direction, but then like people started swarming him and taking photos, and
yeah,
it was cool. It was cool to see him. It was a cool event.
Had a lot it was of fun. Cool to see Charlton Heston play too.
Yeah, thanks for the invite, Universal.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah,
Charlton's the man.
Yeah,
but we had a great time. It was cool, and we got free T-shirt. You're right. That Getty image I got is pretty good.
Your Getty image is fantastic. I didn't make the cut.
Yeah, you didn't get
I didn't get a photo.
They got Nathan. Yeah. Nathan got a couple too.
And I thought the photographer complimented me on my shoes too.
She probably was like, delete.
No.
Delete.
She seemed very nice. She seemed very friendly.
Yeah, she's good at her job. All right, that wraps Letterboxd recap for this week. We have so many great episodes. We just did an A24 movie draft with Blake's Takes, that great podcast with brothers Blake and Garrett, which was a lot of fun. Next week, we're going to do an episode on the best horror movies you've never seen on Monday, so don't miss that episode. We're going to give you so many great recommendations of horror films that we love that maybe many people don't know about. Plus,
we're doing a Denis Villeneuve episode on Wednesday, a complete career spotlight on the filmmaker.
That's going to be a banger.
Yeah.
Don't miss that. Wednesday, Denis Villeneuve spotlight. Woo!
We put a lot into that.
Like 2 hours into that. It was so much fun. That was one of my favorite episodes we've done recently since like Dune. But yeah, appreciate y'all so much for tuning in. Don't forget to become a patron today at patreon.com/Raiders of the Lost Podcast because you could have gotten awesome perks like listening to this episode without ads. The ad-free versions of the show go to Patreon. You can listen to Spotify if you link your account there as well. Not to mention perks like access to our Discord where we do watch parties twice a month, as well as perks like free merchandise, personalized videos, custom episodes. You pick a topic, we'll do an episode for you, plus so many other great things, and the incredible community we've built on Patreon and Discord. Also, leave those 5-star ratings and reviews on Spotify and Apple Podcasts at 5,000 Apple ratings. I will be getting a tattoo.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully, Anthony picks something cool and not something lame.
Like someone suggested an A24 logo.
I don't want a brand.
Yeah, you want to brand yourself.
It'd be a cool tattoo, but I'm not like an A24 guy. I love and see every A24 movie.
So you hate
A24? I'm a huge fan. But if I was going to get a logo for our studio, I'd probably get Warner Brothers, to be honest.
Yeah, Warner Brothers.
If I had to pick a studio logo. But I don't want like a brand logo. That's a brand.
Yeah.
It's like getting Nike.
Good point. Good point.
But I would get maybe an A24 tattoo from one of their movies. Who knows? We'll see. But I kind of want another tattoo anyways, but maybe I'll think of something.
Get the Atreides house logo.
I'll get the Atreides hawk.
Yeah, right on your chest.
Huge.
That would be a good chest tattoo, honestly.
Yeah, I'm going to get a chest tattoo of the Atreides hawk. Got it, man. And also, just share us with your family and friends. It's the best way for a podcast to grow organically. Word of mouth is essential for our show reaching the highest heights it can. So thank you so much for tuning in, everybody.
See you next time.
Raiders of the Lost Podcast is a Mirror Image production. Sound mixing done by Jacob Kosler. Opening music by Chase Jackson.